We're on the air. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis, and welcome back. And all month long, we've been airing from the offices of Gray, Gray, and Gray in Canton, Massachusetts. Wonderful offices. They've been here, I think, about a year now.
About a year and a half.
Yeah. A year and a half. It's so nice here. And again, that was Rich Hershen, partner at Gray, Gray, and Gray, and one of the Radio Entrepreneurs reporters. Thank you, Rich.
My pleasure. It's good to be here.
Okay. You know, we've had a reporter on the show since the beginning of the show. Not always easy to get him in.
He's a busy guy,
XBC, BU, international business, real estate mogul. I'm going to lay it on heavy. Traveling the world. Who are we talking about? Who else? But Greg Stoller, our international business reporter. Welcome back, Greg.
Thank you. I'm glad this isn't radio because this isn't TV because you're making me blush.
Well, we'll have you on the YouTube. You know that. We'll be pushing you out. But Greg, there's so much going on in the, you know, it's sort of like Pee Wee Herman. I hate to say Pee Wee Herman. You know, Pee Wee's world, Greg's world. What's going on in Greg's world?
A good theme song.
I watched a documentary last month about.
Not sure I like where this whole thing's
the first
going.
Israeli Air Force ever. There were like 15 right. American flyers at the end of the Second World War, and I looked at one of the flyers and I said to my wife, "That's Pee Wee Herman's father." Look at the. And she goes, "How do you know that?" I go, "Look at the face." And I went online and I did research. It was Pee Wee Herman's father.
Wow, that's really impressive.
He was one of the original Israeli Air Force flyers in 1948. So Pee Wee's world is not that bad. So,
okay, that works.
So Greg's world, and there's so much going on, I have to have the general statement.
I've been very fortunate. It's been a wonderful year. I transitioned to Boston University's Questrom School of Business. Wonderful transition, very happy there. I had a terrific 15 years at Boston College. Very excited to be at BU, looking forward to year number two. A lot of exciting stuff is going on. I found out a few weeks ago, I'm honored that I was named an ethics fellow for the upcoming academic year in the Cicillo Institute for Global Ethics. So in addition to experiential learning, entrepreneurship, international business, I'll be spending a year focusing on global ethics, and I'm very honored and excited to have the opportunity.
I don't know. You know, we always felt that you were an ethics fellow here. You know that.
Well, thank you.
But
I appreciate that.
We gave you that title long ago.
We gave that
thank
title
you. I appreciate that.
And you so long.
Right.
Normally, I would say, can I get that in writing? But this works for me.
It's on tape.
Exactly.
Now, what does it mean to be an ethics fellow?
So we are going to be taking our full-time MBA students. This is going to be the first cohort that's starting in August of 2016. They're going to be going through something called Launch, which is sort of an introduction to ethics and how that permeates throughout the full-time MBA curriculum. Then I'm going to be championing something called Relaunch, which is happening in August a year later, so August of 2017. My value add is they're going to, amongst other activities, engage in a three-day competition where I'm going to find 20-plus entrepreneurs to work with them. They have to write a mini business plan on how their social responsibility and social strategy merges with their business strategy. We're going to do it in a competitive format, and the opportunity is when they come back for their second year after their three-month internship, it's also another reminder of not only that the fact that ethics should be integrated with the rest of the curriculum, but now they're going to apply 9 months of academic work from year number one, 3 months of a summer internship to something literally from the get-go at the start of the second year.
Is having such a focus on ethics relatively new in the college and university world? I mean, you read so much about things in the paper, and I don't know if it's just social media and the way the media works now that you read about it more, or is...
I think that's a great question.
More?
I know that when I was in business school, we did a couple of cases here, a couple of cases there, and we certainly talked about it. What impresses me about Boston University and the approach that they're taking is that they are making it not just an add-on or not just something sort of adjunct to their curriculum. It is part of the curriculum. And the fact that they want to do it from step one in August of 2016 to step two with Relaunch in August of 2017, I think is just really good business, and it's great academia as well.
You know, I have a background, my educational background, I'm older than both of you, is both in psychology and business.
Right.
And in both disciplines, I never heard the word ethics when I went to university. Never heard the word. And I think, you know, again, with my experience at Babson, which was limited, we heard it a lot at Babson. And I think it's because millennials drove it into the curriculum. Because millennials want to be more ethical. They want a better environment. They want a better world. And I think that universities have picked up on the fact that their student body is concerned about how do we make money but not necessarily run the world like my parents did.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I was lucky enough last week to get an op-ed published in an outlet called Founders Wire on integrating global ethics into your business strategy. Jeffrey, I think you're right on, you hit the nail right on the head. For the millennials, it's not just an additional thought. It's not just something they should think about. It's part of what makes them them.
Right.
And the fact that they are going to be loyal to certain companies because of their social mission, the fact that they're going to avoid certain companies because of their unethical practices, I think is about time. But it's nice that an entire generation is embracing this concept.
You know, and I'll pick on Rich to make my next point, which is the same way. When I, and this isn't necessarily accurate, but for the purpose of the point, I'll do it. When I first went into business, I never thought of my bosses when I was being interviewed as to look into their ethics. I always thought of, do they really know their craft really well? Were they really great practitioners at what they did? Because I wanted to learn the skill of the industry. But today, if I were going into business, I would want to work for a guy like Rich, because I wouldn't be looking at his intelligence. I'd be looking at his ethics. And I believe, that's why I said a pick on. But I believe I can trust Rich. I believe he's a guy who's going to tell me what he really thinks, and he's going to stand behind what he does, and he's also talented. And I believe that about you as well. And I think it's not only changed millennials, it's changed me, because I look at that where I might not have looked at that 30 years ago.
And I think it even goes a step farther than that. One of my colleagues at BU says, you know, Jeffrey, you've got a ballpoint pen sitting in front of you, and she'll say to me, so how is the ballpoint pen manufactured? Are the people living or working in that factory receiving a living wage? Does that factory comply with international OSHA standards if it's outside of the United States? Is the assembly of the pen fully recyclable? Where do they get the ink from? And if that's sourced from another country, how does that country sort of stack up on the living wage, spectrum as well? So it's going even further than I could trust Rich or not trust Rich. And thank you for saying that, you know, you think you can trust me. I think that's all well and good,
but that's all good.
But you
and I have had private communications around.
Oh, all joking aside, I completely agree with
ethics.
You. Oh, I completely agree with you, but I'm just saying, even if you're looking at something as simple as a ballpoint pen, millennials don't say we're going to separate the pen from our life. It's all interwoven into one.
You know, I resigned an account yesterday, and I agonized over the letter, because I've only resigned two accounts in the last 30 years.
Right.
And it's not my nature to give up on work. And I wrote them a long letter, and I struggled for days to write it. And when I wrote it, I didn't know how they'd react. And I got a call from the client last night who thanked me for the considerate letter, who thanked me for not billing them when I knew that the work couldn't be successful, when I was pointing out what was going to keep the work from being successful, and that I wasn't just out to do the work and make money from it. And so what made me nervous ended up making me feel good, because he could see through the whole issue.
And I think there's a lot to that. I think that with all of the material that's published about any of us online, even as, you know, direct as LinkedIn versus reputation, you can't outrun yourself. And I've been saying that to students for years. You are who you are. And you might be able to be aggressive with deal one, maybe a little bit more aggressive with deal two. But if you really stick it to somebody, when you get to deal five or six, it's a pretty small ecosystem that we all coexist in. It's going to come back and get you.
Well, unless your name's Donald Trump, from what I've been told. Where are those taxes? And I'm not saying good or bad, but I mean, I was traveling with a real estate developer who did business with him, and I guess, you know, there's a reason the taxes aren't being shown. So we'll see.
Yeah, but I think that's all part of it. And I'm really excited. I'm really appreciative of the opportunity, and think it's timely to your point, Rich. You know, it's not something that should be an add-on or an afterthought. It should be part of the core of what everybody's studying today, business or otherwise.
Well, people have realized that the world is not it's not an entitlement. And because it's not an entitlement, they want to do business. They want to make money. They want to live well. But they want to make sure we can continue to live well.
Couldn't agree with you more.
I think that's the bottom line on that whole thing. Now, what else are you doing in Greg's world?
I'm very excited that on June 5th, our television show that is a three-year-old project is about to debut on commercial television.
Wow.
It's called The Language of Business. We are going to be on one of the New Hampshire television stations, WBIN.
Right.
And we're going to be weekly, Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. We've been working on this project ever since I was at Boston College.
Is it a school project?
It is not a school project.
Okay.
It initially was supporting one of my courses at Boston College, but now it's sort of taken on a life of its own. We're currently on 92 public access stations in 24 states across the country. The idea is, was it going to be marketable enough? Was it going to be interesting enough that it could be broadcast on commercial television? I think the answer to that is absolutely. The challenge has been to convert from a monthly format to a weekly format. I'm so appreciative and excited that it's about to be aired, and the fact that we have a weekly slot and it's Sunday mornings, I just couldn't be happier and very appreciative, as I said, for the opportunity and looking forward to working with our New Hampshire TV partner.
Well, okay, so now you have a commercial venture that could be a profit venture, a television show. You have your real estate business, which you don't talk about a lot, which you have talked about. You have philanthropy, which you do, and nonprofit work. And you have the university. And how many courses are you teaching?
A lot.
Over six, right?
Yes.
Which is, I can't even comprehend six.
I don't. Are there 24 hours a day in Greg's world?
Okay. So
let's just say I have a very supportive wife.
Assuming that, yeah, that's right. And you're a father and you're a husband.
Right.
I don't know where the husband thing falls on the continuum.
It's more important than anything you just mentioned, but
yeah,
thank you.
Your wife must be listening.
Including being a father, but that's neither here nor there.
No,
honey, I love you.
Eventually, there's only so much capacity. I mean, you can't do all those things as heavy as you've been doing.
Right. I think that over time, you tend to emphasize what's important. It was very important to me to join BU and to really pick up where hopefully I'd left off at Boston College. BU was incredibly supportive. The television show is no longer an individual venture. I now have a team of people who are working on that. The real estate company, I've now brought in more people to help. It is really the, you know, true organization in action. That, you know, entrepreneurship, I've said for years in the classroom, is a team sport. You can't do it yourself, although you'd love to believe that you're the only one who can, you know, no pun in terms of what Rich does for a living, but bring things out to three decimal places. And although you want to be that guy or that girl, and you want to be, you know, the chief cook and bottle washer, you're right, there are only 24 hours in a day. You have to rely on a team, and I've been very fortunate to have a team in each of these ventures.
Rich is in shock. He's used to me making accounting jokes because he knows one thinks I'm credible.
I know the guests are now going to start.
Right, now and you knew I was incredible, so it was okay when I did it.
That's right.
So, and by the way, I should mention, we have a wonderful team at BU in the Questrom School of Business. Just terrific. It's all good. It's all good in terms of what's happening.
And you're healthy.
Thank God.
Right. Wow.
Sounds like things in Greg's world are looking good right now.
My hobby is spending time with our kids because I want to make sure that they don't forget my name or I don't forget theirs. Because
oh, sweet.
I mean, there just isn't enough time in the day, all joking aside, for a hobby. You know, honestly, I work as hard as I can during the workday, but when I get home, I'm all in with the family.
I think we're going to have to do like the Kardashians. We're going to do a reality show just following you around.
Those would get negative ratings,
I'm going to put a GoPro on you.
I don't think it's that interesting, but thanks for the nod.
If somebody wants to get involved in Greg's world, how do they find you?
Absolutely through the Boston University Questrom School of Business, gstaller@bu.edu. That's G as in Greg, S as in Sam, T as in Tom, O as in Oscar, L as in Larry, a second L as in Larry, E as in Edward, R as in Robert at bu.edu.
And you're not going to forget your roots, right? You're going to stick with Radio Entrepreneurs.
Why do you think I'm back here with Radio Entrepreneurs? Honestly, all joking aside, I tell people all the time, you can never forget where you started from. And you took a chance on me several years ago, and you've honored that friendship ever since, and I've never forgotten it. And that's why I continue to come back. But I'm equally appreciative of the opportunity each and every time.
I'll never forget the quote from Ed Tarlow, who said to me, "Never forget the girl you brought to the dance." It's a good expression.
Absolutely.
And this is Radio Entrepreneurs. Again, at the offices, wonderful offices. If you've never been down to Gray, Gray, and Gray,
it's really nice.
It's spectacular here. Just drive by that dingy little Reebok building and see the Gray,
and a small little Dunkin' Donuts. And you get to the worldwide headquarters of Gray, Gray, and Gray.
And thanks to Rich Hershen, we're here. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more stories of entrepreneurship after these messages.